is Northfield Outdoors, brought to you by Professional Pride Realty. From hunting to hiking, camping to cooking, mushroom hunting to motorcycling, and so much more, your hosts, Dave Vesladol and Andy Beham, will enlighten, entertain, and inform you with a lively mix of guests and discussion on all things outdoors. And now your hosts, Dave and Andy.
Welcome to another edition of Northfield Outdoors on KYMN 95.1 The One and 1080 AM. Northfield Outdoors is proud to be sponsored by Professional Pride Realty. I'm Dave Vesladol, and as always, I have my ever good-looking and former model, Andy Beham.
Oh, Dave, you're just flattering me because you're sitting there looking like a someone who just got back from vacation with your tan and smile on your face.
Absolutely.
So I could ask you what you did outdoors. It wasn't shoveling like the rest of us. What have you been doing?
It was very frustrating to come back and see that snow was still here. I much preferred hanging out on the beach. And I took it very easy. I just ate way too much, drank way too much, and had a little bit too much fun in the water.
No, you're in Mexico. It's expected.
Yeah, we had a ball. But we did some other real cool stuff. We did some ATVing. That was fun. We did some tubing in the ocean. Snorkeling was great.
Yeah.
I found out that if you really want to attract fish, bring a lot of chips and guacamole in your pocket.
So you just shove some avocados in your pocket when snorkeling? Or?
Yes. We had a little extra guacamole rolled up napkin went out there. Fish really, really like that. No. So
I saw some pictures from when you guys went out ATVing. By the end of it, you looked like you'd been through a little bit of a battleground.
Oh, my gosh. That was wild. Went through the jungle. Got just totally dirty and stuff. And then we got to go drive on the beach for quite a ways. That was a lot of fun, splashing through the water and stuff.
Clean off some of the dust and dirt from the jungle.
Yeah. Now back to Minnesota.
Yeah, back to my reality of what I've been doing outside, and it's moving all this snow around.
Well, I'm glad somebody is.
Yeah. I thought about going out to your place to do it, but I just got too busy.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping you would, but you will. Hey, Andy, I got just, before we get into our topic of the day, I have just a couple items here just from the DNR that I'd like to just mention out there.
Yeah, the new fishing season's underway. You have to get a new license as of March 1st.
So. Yes, and the fishing opener course is on May 12th. And anybody who's planning on fishing for any northerns really needs to take a look at the new laws the DNR has put out there, because there's quite some changes with northern fishing. And I think I'll just mention this, that the DNR, they have three sections, the north central, northeast, and southern. And the new regulations for north central, you have a limit of 10 pikes, or 10 northerns, but not more than two of the northerns can be longer than 26 inches. Everything that is 22 to 26 inches must be released. When you go to the northeast, you're only allowed two northerns, and that's it. And anglers must release all 30 to 40 inches with only, you can keep one of them if it's over 40 inches. And in the south, which is our area, of course, you can only keep two northerns, and the minimum size, they have to be over 24 inches. So before you go out fishing on fishing opener, just take a quick review of all of the new fishing regulations.
To keep some of them in the lake for the poor fishermen like myself.
There's so many of those small little snakes and stuff, and the big ones everybody keeps. And so I think part of it is, they want to not only get better size, but also, northern is a predator fish, and they can take care of some of the garbage fish if you let them get to be a decent size.
Yeah. All right. Well, make sure when you go get your license, grab a guidebook and keep yourself up to date. We have a good show today, Dave.
Yes. We're getting into that time of year where people are starting to think about the summer, vacations and stuff. And I remember talking to a friend of mine. He's thinking about getting a trailer to maybe go on a little trip or something. So we got talking about, how do you know what you need in a trailer? What kind of a trailer should I get? What should I be looking for? So we're pretty lucky today. We've got Jim Dogs from Featherlight Trailer out of Elko, Minnesota. He is our resident expert, and he's going to answer all of our in-depth questions, Andy.
So. We're all going to be experts by the end of this show.
Yeah. So welcome, Jim.
Thank you.
Hey, Jim, before we get started with a lot of our questions, first, can you tell us a little, let's hear a little bit about Featherlight Trailer out of Elko, Minnesota.
Yeah, Featherlight.
It's a place that I see on 35.
Yep, right on Highway 35 up by Elko, right off the freeway in County 2. We've been around since 93.
Okay.
Started with Mr. Gary Rock. Recently was purchased back in July last year by Sam Blank. And so we're under new ownership. And status quo, just, you know, doing business and selling lots and lots of trailers.
It looks like when I drive by there, you've got a selection.
We do. We've got pretty much 10 acres of trailers.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we can have anywhere from 200 to 350 trailers on the lot at any one time.
Okay. Well, how about yourself? Give us a little background. I've known you, Jim, so I know that you're not new to the trailer business, but... No. What's your background with trailers and selling trailers?
Well, I kind of tripped into it many, many years ago. I started selling part-time for Sundowner Trailers in Northfield here back in, 96. And I was doing that, like I said, part-time. I ended up selling more trailers than their full-time guy, and so they were begged me to come on full board, and so I did. So I sold for them for... Oh, from 96 to 08, and then when the economy kind of went south there, ended up moving up to Twin Cities Featherlight on 35 there, and been there ever since.
And a lot of trailer places, I think, during the recession went under.
It was tough. It was tough for a lot of people.
Yeah, not a lot of disposable income hanging around at that time.
You got it.
So you've been at this for the better part of 20 years.
Yes,
what's
sir.
Changed over those years?
Oh, wow. A lot.
It's a pretty open question.
Yeah, it is. You know, technology obviously has changed. A lot of the quality of trailers have improved. You know, a lot of the fly-by-night companies are no longer around. So, you know, you're staying with the big names, the good names, the quality products. There's been a lot of really cool changes.
All right.
So if I'm a... customer coming in and I come up to you and I say, I want to buy a trailer. That's a pretty open-ended question.
Yep.
Before I ever go into a dealership, what are some of the things I should be running through my mind as far as how I want to use it and stuff like that to make the buying experience maybe even a little better?
Well, it definitely makes it easier for me.
Okay.
When someone has a good idea what they're going to use it for, and I can guide with some things like the size of the trailer and so on and so forth, but it is helpful if you have an idea. Okay, am I going to use it for just moving household stuff from point A to point B, or if I'm is it for work? You know, am I a carpenter or a contractor, or if I'm going to use it for my toys, my motorcycles or four-wheelers or what have you. That kind of information really helps me out a lot to guide a person to make the right decision for themselves.
When coming in, if I've made up in my mind that I'm just looking for a trailer to vacation in, there's still a wide range of types of trailers. I suppose it makes a difference whether I got a family or not, whether I'm going across country or not, those types of things.
Right, absolutely. Obviously, if you're just by yourself or a spouse versus, full-fledged, four rugrats and curtain climbers, you know, you've got a big family. That's another story. And then, you know, it needs to, you know, are you going to live in it? You know, do you want a living quarter type trailer with a garage, for instance? Or, you know, how are you going to use it?
Okay. Well, later on, let's kind of break those apart, you know, between the cargo toy haulers versus the vacation ones. But before we get to that point, what are ways that average consumers should do some research? We're in the midst of a lot of sportsman shows going on. A few weeks back, I was up at the Midwest Sportsman Show, and there were trailers there, and now I'm seeing ads for more. Is that a good place to go to kind of kick the tires to get some information, or is there better sources? Or?
Actually, that's a great place.
Okay.
As is the internet. You know, you can get online and you know, do your sleuthing and investigative work there. But it is nice to go to the shows like that because you can touch and feel. And it can be a really good place to buy as long as you've already done your research. It's not necessarily a great place to go and buy if you haven't done your research. You know, you've got to kind of go there really knowing what you want if you're buying at a show.
So that's pretty important to before you jump in and just grab something.
I think so. Okay. I think it's but it is a great place to get ideas and kind of formulate perhaps an idea as to how you might use the trailer once you see all the different configurations.
Do you run into a lot of people that don't know exactly what they want?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, so
all the time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's not uncommon.
Okay.
Well, and I'm sure that they always want more. It's you have to also be honest with your price range, how much you want to spend on something. Are you only going to use it a couple times a year? You know, what are some of the factors that you have to bring to people's attention that they may not have thought about?
Well, one that's a real big factor is what are they going to tow it with?
Yeah.
You know, do you have like a little SUV type of vehicle, or are you pulling with a one-ton dually or something in between? And so that helps me then to guide them to a trailer they can actually handle. Because I don't want to sell them a trailer that's too big for their vehicle, and then they realize, oh, geez, now I have to buy a truck too.
Yeah.
That'll add a little cost.
Yeah, just a little. Mm-hmm.
What type of, you know, staying with that perhaps vacation travel trailer type of stuff, what are the key things besides what you're going to be towing it with, that they should be looking at? Is there big variances in prices?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, obviously, the bigger the trailer and the more options, the more cost. So, and that's something that's helpful for me is when someone comes in and says, hey, I have, you know, X amount of dollars to invest in a trailer. Then I can kind of keep the focus in that area. The more money you have, obviously, the more options and more things that we can do. Yeah.
And the difference between I'm just going to call it a bumper pole or trailer hitch and a fifth wheel. What kind of give us a little bit, what are some of the key differences?
Well, obviously, a bumper pole trailer is being pulled behind the tow vehicle. It's off the bumper hitch. And then with that style of trailer, you're kind of limited with how long you can go because then you're dealing with pressure on your bumper or your pin pressure and then just the sheer length of the trailer. And sometimes we have to put weight distribution hitches on their vehicles so that we don't have the sway and it reduces the weight on their tow vehicle.
Is that something you would put on longer trailers, or is that something you'd recommend almost for any trailer?
No, it's more about the length and the weight of the trailer.
Okay.
A small little trailer, usually you don't have to worry about anything like that.
I remember we have a pop-up camper, and there's one time where, I don't remember exactly why, but we decided to pull it with my wife's minivan instead of my truck. And it was well within the weight range that it said it could pull, but going down a gravel road and it starts going side to side, you could definitely feel it moving you around a little bit. And that's with a little pop-up. So as they get bigger, I can only imagine.
And with a fifth wheel, what kind of explain to people, what does that mean? Can I get by with my F-150 pulling that, or is that?
Well,
and how does it all work?
Yeah, the fifth wheel is going to be up in the box of the truck. That's where your coupler is, where your connection to the vehicle is.
So there's some extra cost with
that. With that extra hitch, you know, there is cost there. But the benefit with a fifth wheel, or if you will, a gooseneck, there's two different types of hitches. A fifth wheel we usually see in the camper industry.
Okay.
A gooseneck is a ball, and that drops over, the hitch drops over the ball and gets locked on. And that you see a lot in your horse trailer industry or in your commercial flatbeds and things like that.
Is one better than the other?
No, they both do the same thing. For whatever reason, the fifth wheel is kind of gravitated more towards the camper area, and the gooseneck seems to be in the horse trailer, cattle trailer, and so on. But we do see the gooseneck in the toy hauler industry as well.
And do you usually suggest a bigger vehicle for towing than that?
Yeah, when we start getting into a fifth wheel type trailer, you know, a 3/4 ton or larger isn't a dumb idea. And the nice thing about a fifth wheel, too, is the weight displacement goes all the way up to your steer tires on the truck. So you're displacing the weight that you're pulling. So you can pull more weight, and the trailer can be longer than it would be if you're pulling it off the bumper.
So what are some of the lengths of these trailers? I mean, is there a big variance in that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you can go... like I pull a little 23-foot gooseneck trailer. It's not very big. I can pretty much parallel park it. But I've sold trailers that are, you know, 40-foot long or longer. So, yeah, they can get out there.
Is there different regulations across the country on the length of those, or is it pretty standard?
Well, it's reasonably standard, but each state has some regulations, you know, between combination of the tow vehicle and the trailer. In some states, you can't go over 60 feet. Other states are, you know, 75 feet.
Oh, okay.
Let's take a quick break here from our sponsor here, and we come back, we will dive more into trailers with Jim Dougs.
Professional Pride Realty is a proud sponsor of Northfield Outdoors on 95 The One. Let the staff and realtors at Professional Pride help you make coming indoors from the outdoors a welcoming experience in the home that's right for you. The realtors at Professional Pride are local and know the Northfield market. Whether it's buying your first home, upgrading from your current home, or purchasing your own slice of the outdoors, let Professional Pride help you every step of the way. To learn more, check them out on Facebook or at ProfessionalPrideRealty.com. Keep enjoying the outdoors and let Professional Pride worry about your indoors.
Okay, welcome back. We have been talking with Jim Dougs from Featherlight Trailers, located in Elko, Minnesota. So if you're driving up 35 and you'll see on the west side of the road 10 acres of trailers, that's where Jim is at. And you're listening to KYMN 95.1, The One, 1080 AM. Jim, let's get into actually buying a trailer as far as I'm going to use it for going around vacationing with my family. What are some of the things I should be looking for, and what are some of the things that are kind of the norm now in vacation trailers?
Well, most of them, you know, are going to be set up with a kitchen, a living area, bedroom areas, and some will have a garage area to bring your fun with you, and you know, whatever toys that might be.
Like an ATV or a motorcycle or
yeah,
something
that's
like
correct.
That? You
is bet.
That kind of the same thing as a toy hauler, so to speak?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. And I remember the days of riding in a camper above a pickup. And yes, that had a bathroom in it, and yes, that had a little kitchen. But I think I would assume that a lot of the stuff has upgraded since then.
Yeah, they still are doing campers like that, okay. Obviously. You know, you can still go to a camper dealership and be able to find that type of a product. What we sell more of are gooseneck or fifth wheel type campers that you're towed basically on or behind your truck. And again, they have everything in them. Your kitchen, everything goes with you.
Okay. And if I'm looking... If I come into you and say, I want a vacation trailer, but I'm going to park it all summer long mm-hmm. at our lake lot, is that the same trailer that I would be using to haul across country, or is there a difference?
Well, there can be a difference, okay. Yes. I mean, there are trailers that are called park models. They're really designed, it's a you haul it to the lake and you leave it there. That's where it stays forever. You're not moving it from one place to another. Most of your fifth wheel campers and toy hauler type vehicles, those are ones that you go vacationing with. You go from, you know, you go out west, you go down south, you go have fun, you know, wherever it might be, out in Wyoming, you take it places.
That's so, more my style, you know, go see the countryside. But for those that want to keep in place these park models, is that just because of sheer length that they're not easy to haul around? Is that kind of what makes them a park model?
That's correct. Yeah, okay. they're huge.
Yeah, usually you see them, they park them, they build a deck next to them, and it becomes right. Their cabin.
That is correct.
Is there a big difference if I'm going to use this trailer mainly for traveling in the south, or if I'm going to use it a lot traveling around during the winter time when it's cold? Are all trailers pretty well insulated now? I guess what I'm asking, do you have a winter model or a summer model, or is it all one and the same now?
Well, there are some trailers out there that you can use year-round. And a lot of those are going to be higher off the ground, and they'll have belly tanks that are heated so that you can use them in wintertime. Most of the time, we don't use campers in the wintertime just because a lot of the dump tanks and such are exposed to the elements, and they can freeze and cause problems.
Are there going to be pretty strict regulations on your wastewater and stuff? Are there two separate tanks, one for washing your hands and dishes, another one for bathroom?
You have technically three tanks. You have a freshwater tank.
Oh, I guess that would be on board.
Yeah, you might want that one.
You got to have some water with you.
Yeah.
Right?
Good point.
Yeah. And then you have two waste tanks. One is for your gray water, which is your sink and your shower, and then your black water, which is going to be your toilet.
Okay. And then do you run into problems being able to dump that water?
Well, more and more, a lot of the campgrounds that you can go to have their own dump stations right there.
Okay.
But you can Google whatever state or area that you're going to be going through. You can Google RV dump stations and find one that's near you.
Is there a big difference in the quality of different brands? And if so, as a consumer, what do I look for in the different quality?
Well, that's a loaded question.
Yeah.
obviously, there's...
If you want good quality, come to Featherlight.
Come to Featherlight. Yeah. You got it. But, you know, obviously, there are a lot of different tiers of quality. But that also is there to support different budgets. And so, depending on where you are at with your budget, that would dictate, at least at some level, what quality of trailer you're going to purchase.
What about purchasing a used trailer? If I'm looking at a used trailer, what should I, as a consumer, be some of the key things I would want to look at?
Well, that's actually a really good question. When you're buying used, you really got to do your homework. You've got to really look that trailer over very well. Because there can be a lot of problems that are underlying and that you don't realize. And you can walk into a camper or a living quarter trailer, and everything looks really, really nice. But then you'll be walking along and, oh, what's this? Oh, it's a little soft spot in the floor. And the person is selling it, oh, that's been there forever. No problems. Well, you find out then that they've had a plumbing leak and it's created a soft spot underneath the floor. So now your vinyl and your subfloor and everything has to be torn out. And it's a very expensive undertaking.
Do you guys do inspections of a used trailer?
Mm-hmm.
If I'm thinking of purchasing this used trailer from somebody, can they actually bring it in and pay you guys to do an inspection?
Yeah, we've done that. We don't do a lot of it, but okay. Yeah, we have done that.
Okay.
Now, when we take a used trailer, it goes through our shop and rigorous, you know, goes through every aspect of the trailer. It's completely washed, detailed. Brakes, bearings are taken care of. You know, if there's any problems with plumbing and leakage and what have you, all that's taken care of. Appliances are checked through, so the people who purchase a used trailer from us can feel comfortable that they're getting something that's been gone through.
Okay.
Now, if we've piqued the interest in, you know, some of our listeners, they have a family, like, you know, this does sound like fun. How do they go about trying out a trailer? Are there rental places? Do they, you know, find out if they can spend a weekend in a trailer with their family without all choking each other?
Interesting, yeah. I imagine we do not rent trailers. It's something that's not in, you know, in our picture, what we do.
Yep.
So we sell. Now, obviously, if you're looking for a trailer, you can spend as much time in that trailer and get yourself comfortable and acclimated and see how it fits you and your family. But as far as renting, we don't offer that. But there are places that do offer rentals so that you can kind of get a flavor and a taste. Hey, is this camping, traveling life for me?
Yep. Okay.
Could you give us just a broad price range of, okay, I'm looking at a vacation trailer to pull or a fifth wheel to pull. What, for a new one, what's the kind of a price range I would be looking at? Or is it a huge range?
It's really, really huge.
Okay.
You could be in the teens and you could spend...
And that gets me a bed and a full complement of... kitchen and a bathroom and stuff?
Yeah, but it's, you know, that's going to be on your entry level type stuff.
Okay.
And we carry more upper end products. So you could go all the way up into the $100,000 mark if you really wanted to.
We're going
to
get into Andy Behem money there.
Yeah. There you go.
That radio money, it just keeps coming in.
Yeah. Okay, well, maybe we can switch it up a little bit. I'd like to talk a little bit more about toy haulers, or what I call as a toy hauler.
Mm-hmm.
So you can get a trailer that has a living quarter in it, and then you called it a garage that they'll put your items in.
Yes.
Is that pretty popular?
Very much so. That industry is going crazy.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, it is just accelerated. Years past, you know, you'd buy a cargo trailer to throw your four-wheeler or your motorcycle in and then travel. Now you're taking your living area and your garage with all of your toys, like your motorcycles, your UTV, four-wheelers, whatever it might be.
So let's talk a little about what some of the key things we should look for in there. And I just want to relate one little story. I had a friend that it wasn't a living quarter, but it was a cargo trailer and supposedly set up to haul motorcycles. It had the rings on the side and on the floor. Mm-hmm. After going across one state, every ring had pulled out and the motorcycle was on its side.
Oh,
and we found
that
the screws were not into any frame or anything, but they were half-inch screws into some plywood. And that was it. So are those kind of things that people don't think about when...
Well, they probably don't necessarily think about them. They're probably believing that whoever installed the D-rings did it correctly. When we do it, it goes into a frame. So
is that a key thing? They should be into a frame.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Or at least plated underneath so that it can have the proper weight carrying capacities. So.
But is there other things a person should be considering when, does it matter what I'm hauling, whether it's a motorcycle or an ATV or anything like that?
Well, not too much. For those applications, it helps us to know what you're hauling that we can put the D-rings into the proper locations. And if you're hauling multiple things, like maybe one weekend you might be going off with your motorcycles, and another time you're going to be going with your UTV, then we might want to put in multiple D-rings to give you the versatility that you might want.
Okay. I saw where someone had it was basically a cargo trailer to haul motorcycles, but it had fold-down beds. Is that something you guys...
Mm-hmm.
Also do?
Yep, you bet. I've got one like that right now on our lot that it has. It actually has like a, it's really small. It's a bumper pull style.
Okay.
It has a bathroom and some closet and cabinetry up in the nose. And then it has a bunk that folds down into a couch or flips completely all the way flat to make a bed. But then it's flat up against the wall when you want to haul your bikes or your four-wheelers or whatever.
But I suppose those are a little bit more reasonably priced than that. And what about the ramp? Is there something that goes when you leave the ramp down? Or is it just open in the back, or can you do anything?
Well, it's usually open, yeah.
Yeah.
That being said, I've had many customers where we'll put in a screen door that's the full width of the opening of the thing. You can just slide that down from the roof to the floor and keep the bugs out and enjoy the space.
Okay.
You know, and I know I saw once it was, you know, the opposite of the economy model with the beds that fold out of the wall is, and I know you don't really dive into the motorhomes too much, but it was a giant Class A motorhome, and the toy hauler part in the back was actually a garage for one of the small cars that you see out there, like a Mini or something like that. So the couple pulls up, gets their camper in place, backs out with the car and runs into town so they don't have to drive the motorhome into town. So just a small little car that tows inside of the motorhome.
Crazy. So, Jim, you're saying that's a trend right now that a lot of people are really looking at having a little bit of a living quarter and be able to haul their toy along with them?
Yeah, absolutely. It's really, really getting big. Yeah. And we have the ability to do a fully open living quarter package where there's no wall separation between the garage and the living area. So when you roll your bikes out, you just increase your whole living space. And then we can also do ones where you have the wall, separate garage, keep your motorcycles, what have you, and then your living quarters forward.
And again, getting back with looking at a used trailer, like a used toy haul or something like that, you mentioned the importance of the rings, that they're installed correctly. Are there other things that a person should really be concerned about? Are there issues with axles and stuff like that? Or?
Well, I mean, in terms of axle ratings, usually they have the proper axles underneath the trailer for the size of the trailer. Biggest thing with axles and brakes and such is doing your due diligence to maintain them. Okay. You know, make sure your bearings are packed. You don't want to burn up a bearing when you're halfway across Arizona. And you want to make sure that your brakes are in good working condition, especially if you're in the mountains.
And the material that most of the trailers are made out of, is it aluminum frames or is it steel frames or combination?
Well, there's a lot of everything out there.
Oh, there is.
Yeah. In my industry, my world, we just do all aluminum structures. We carry both Featherlight and Sundowner trailers, and those are both all aluminum construction.
Okay. And again, getting back to the buying experience, what makes it easiest for you when a customer comes in? What is some of the key, again, just to go over it again a little bit more, the key information that they should have before they get real serious about buying a trailer, besides a price range?
Right. Besides that, then, you know, the one key is for me to know what they're hauling. Because if they've got a motorcycle, they may not need the height that they would need if they're pulling or they're going to be playing around with a side-by-side or a UTV. A lot of those are getting into the 74, 76, 78 inch height. And so we've got to make sure that the trailer door opening is tall enough for them to drive in.
Ah, good point. Wouldn't that be a little frustrating?
It's happened. I've sold trailers to people that don't tell me what they're using, and then they go, I got to bring this back. I need something a little bit taller. My UTV doesn't go in it.
Okay. Now, what are some of the, you know, I don't want to call them hidden expenses, but things that after the purchase that you need to make sure you're aware of with maintenance, storage, you know, what kind of fees do you have to expect afterwards that you don't want to be surprised about?
Well, one fee that you're going to have at the dealership is tax, title, and license.
Yep.
So that some people don't remember that that's part of the package, but that's one expense. For some folks, if they live in a residential area where they don't allow you to park your camper in your own property, then you have to start looking at where do I store it, things like that.
Okay. Well, we've been talking with Jim Doggs from Featherlight Trailer of Elko, Minnesota. We're just about out of time, but any kind of little other information or suggestions you would pass on to a consumer or just to tell them to stop into Featherlight?
Well, for sure stop in, say hi, and see what we can do for you. But the key is just to really enjoy your hobbies and have fun. Find a trailer that's going to work the best for how you're going to use it, and just enjoy life.
Great, great.
All right. Well, it has been fun and informative. You know, Dave always finds these resident experts to come in and teach us things we don't know. But
Jim might even buy you a cup of coffee if you stop in and talk to him.
That would probably happen.
Yeah.
As always, is the show's not over yet. We do still have enough time left for Dave's interesting facts.
And Jim, this is where we try to stump Andy a little bit.
Usually you don't try and stump me. Usually you just stump me, Dave.
Yeah. But feel free if you want to take a shot at some of these too. Do you know how many families in the U.S. actually own RVs?
Seven. If I'm going to be wrong, I might as well be way wrong. I will go with 275,000.
No, I meant the whole U.S., not just Minnesota.
To be honest, Dave, I have no idea.
Jim, you want to take a shot?
No, thank you. A lot.
This is surprising. 9 million families actually own RVs or trailers.
Oh, I didn't hear or trailers. I only heard RVs. You got to read me the whole question here, Dave.
Okay. How about this one? You know how many people are directly employed with a recreational vehicle? Nationwide?
I know I am.
275,000. Once again, you're way off, Andy. Dave's coughing here, so I'm answering for him.
I started laughing too hard. No, 42,000.
Oh, okay. That's still impressive.
Jim might know this one. Do you know where over 60% of the RVs are manufactured in the United States?
In the Southwest.
No, I want the name of the town.
That would be Elkhart, Indiana.
Yes! See how easy it is,
That's
Andy?
What I was going to say.
See how easy these are. Come on.
Remember, you brought in an expert.
How about the average camper travels how many miles to go camping? One camping trip. I'm going to leave my house.
Is this round trip?
No.
One way. 250 miles.
Actually, you're pretty close.
I know.
190.
Yeah.
Wow.
How many public and private places are there to camp in America?
Public and private.
That you can bring your trailer, RV, etc. to.
9,000.
Surprisingly, you're wrong.
No.
Jim, you want to take a shot here?
100,000?
No, that's way over. I actually thought it'd be more than this. It's 16,000 public and private places that you can camp with your trailers.
All right.
And finally, the first motorized campers were called auto campers or camping trailers. Do you know what year that was?
That would have been 1954, Dave.
That is incorrect.
No!
Excuse me. You got me laughing.
How about Jim? Do you have a guess at this one?
How about 1910?
He is correct. We have a winner here. That is it for today, Andy.
All right.
Otherwise, I'm going to start laughing again.
Yeah. We'll go ahead and let Dave try and recover here. But I want to remind you to, once again, tune in next Saturday to On Tap with Corey and Ira and find out everything about beer in southern Minnesota. As always, the show will be archived at kymnradio.net and found under Northfield Outdoors. Thanks to Hayes for updating the Northfield Outdoors Facebook page and to Professional Pride Realty for sponsoring Northfield Outdoors. And until next time,
get out there and enjoy the great outdoors. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Jim, for coming in. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
This has been Northfield Outdoors with Dave Vesladol and Andy Behem, brought to you by Professional Pride Realty. Join Dave and Andy every other Saturday morning at 11 o'clock right here on 95 The One or streaming at kymnradio.net.